It's not so much that he happens to be the same species as Yoda or generally look identical to Yoda, but as a baby. Or you think like, hey, I get they're the same species, but maybe they could like have different features, you know? Maybe they come in different shades.
Yeah.
Of green or
yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Hi, I'm Maya Garantz.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
In this episode, we're going to ruin Baby Yoda. You knew we were gonna.
We had to at some point. I think people are really amazed that we've waited this long to get to The Mandalorian, but we blame Trump for that. Blame Trump!
And speaking of him, we're also going to be talking about an interesting phenomenon that we have observed in the coverage of Trump, or that was brought to our attention anyway, and we want to dig into what's going on with that.
But first, let's check in. So, Rebecca?
Yes, Maya?
How are we drinking? What are you doing? What's going on?
We are back from a bit of a holiday break here. We didn't really record over the past couple weeks because of Thanksgiving and just everything happening. So yeah, I'm doing okay. Today was not a great day for me. I had, as I was telling you before we started recording, sort of an bad ADHD day. I had a tutoring appointment that I completely forgot about. Like, I knew I had it. I looked at my calendar. I was planning for it during the day. But then when the hour came for it, I just didn't even think about it. And I just went ahead and did other things, only to get texted by the parent or see that text an hour and a half later. Yeah. Being like, are you going to be late? Where are you? Are you okay? And I was like, oh my God. I just completely forgot. And then a short time after that, we were scheduled to record, and I was like, well, I'm not going to forget that now. And then like 20 minutes after we were supposed to have started, I realized that I had completely forgotten that. So it's just one of those, my working memory has shut off kind of days, but that's okay because now I'm drinking and you don't need any kind of brain functions. If you drink enough, you can quiet all that down.
It looks like you're just drinking some scotch.
I am. This is some kind of scotch producer that they don't like make their own, but they bottle and distribute from other distilleries. So I forget their name, but this particular one is made by Kalilla and I think is 10 years old. And I saw it at the liquor store. One of those like hipster liquor stores here in Long Island City, the kind of one where they let you taste everything.
And,
tell you all about the provenance of whatever wine or liquor. Like they
get
know
around all
this
shit. Get around all the COVID rules about bars.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just a tasting. That's a good point. But when I asked about this one, I was like, you know, what's that one up there to the right of the Talisker? You know? And the guy's like, oh, that one's really smoky. I was like, what the fuck's that supposed to mean?
It means you're a girl.
It means I'm a girl. I try not to read into it when they do stuff like that.
No, that's total sexism. That's
really
total
hard
sexism.
Not to.
It's like, little lady, can you handle the peatiness? I don't know if you can handle the peatiness.
Yeah. So I bought it, and it is very smoky, but not any more than most of the good smoky Islas. Also, it's a little one-dimensional. It's not bad. It's a lovely scotch. It's just a little one-dimensional for my taste. I like a more complex
dram. That's right. Let them know that. Let them know that the next time you go in,
I will.
Little lady.
One time in Williamsburg, Matt and I went into a cheese shop, and we were looking for a specific cheese that we'd had and really liked. It was a cheddar, but like a blue cheese cheddar. It's called Shropshire Blue. And the guy behind the counter was like, yeah, that cheese is all right, but I prefer a more complex cheese.
That's just
so ever since that's like the joke Matt and I have about how we really are into simple cheeses. We just do the simpler
You're
the better.
So simple with your cheese taste.
Yeah.
Shameful. Shameful.
Anyway, enough about me and my booze and cheese taste. Maya, how are you doing and what are you drinking?
I am on the verge of losing my mind.
Oh.
Mama needs to get out for a couple of days, and I think that she's gonna, which is good, before I like freaking lose it. Although, as always, the Prozac exercise combo is really working for my mental health.
Well, that's
and actually,
good.
My shrink says that I might be onto something because of where Prozac processes in the liver. She's like, I think you might actually be right. So, hey, I'm drinking a Boston Sour, which is essentially a whiskey sour, but with a little egg white.
Wait, there's always egg white in a whiskey sour.
Not necessarily. And also, I feel very proud of myself because I finally learned when you shake and when you stir.
Oh, okay. I want to hear this. When do you shake and when do you stir?
So the thing about shaking is that you get it to be more chilled, but it makes it cloudier. So you use it for things that are already cloudy, like citrus, like things okay. that like mm-hmm. drinks that you want to keep clear. Those are stirred drinks.
Like a martini.
Yes.
Okay.
But also, when you stir it, it takes longer to get it chilled. Mm-hmm. So the ice is going to melt that infinitesimal little bit more.
Right.
But there's a way that the shaking changes the texture of it. So anything involving egg white, anything involving citrus, anything involving milk, anything cloudy, you shake. Anything that you want to keep clear, you stir. You're welcome, listeners.
That actually sounds really plausible to me. No, because I've done my share of, I'm not going to say research like I've been in the Library of Congress here, but like I've read what's come in front of me regarding the shaking versus stirring thing. I've heard many people tell me what they've heard. I did go to bartending school.
Right.
Back in another century. And I never heard any plausible explanation of why one is really substantially different from the other. People used to say if you shake the cocktail, you bruise the gin, which is like, what does that even mean?
That means nothing.
It means
that's
nothing.
Nonsense.
Then there's like a theory that bruising the gin means that the ice melts too much. And then there's the question of when does it melt more, when you're shaking or when you're stirring and blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, my feeling is like, it does not make a difference. It doesn't really make a difference.
Well, good shaking gets it chilled in like 10 to 15 seconds. Stirring takes 45 seconds to get it sort of to the same chill.
That's science. What can you do about that science?
That's just how it is. So, and the reason I've been thinking about this is because when we've been having our occasional social distance sit in the backyard having people over, mm-hmm. I've been making cocktails in a pitcher fashion, and that cannot be shaken.
Right.
And I was starting to feel bad about that. Like, am I doing something wrong?
Oh.
By making a bigger pitcher where you kind of have to stir. Can I just say, fuck it, I'm just going to stir forever. But no, shaking is sometimes very important.
Here's my general approach.
Mm-hmm.
If it is something that needs to be shaken because it has like egg white in it or something, I shake it.
Yeah.
If I'm going to strain it into a cocktail glass, I shake it. Because right. I'm going to strain it anyway.
Right.
But if I'm serving it over ice, I almost always stir it.
That makes sense.
There is no reason in my mind to shake a cocktail that's going to be served over ice anyway.
That makes so much sense.
The thing that irritates me the most in the world is when a bartender shakes it in the shaker and then strains it over ice. That's like double watering down my drink.
Yes.
Don't do that. That's so unnecessary. Mm-mm. You put ice in it to chill it and then you put it over ice. Don't do that.
So,
what were you going to say?
I just wanted to share something completely random with you because as a former educator, I just think you'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
That we were on a walk with my son who's about to turn 10 tomorrow.
Happy birthday!
And walking by a golf course, he used the following two words to describe any possible random stray balls that might hit them. He used the word rogue and errant mm-hmm. to describe these balls.
So your 9-year-old child, almost 10, was like, should we be careful if any errant golf
yes.
balls come our
yes.
way?
Yes, correct.
And you felt proud of that.
Yes, I did. Yes, I totally did. Come on. Yeah, I felt 100% proud okay. of his unselfconscious use of the words rogue and errant. Abso-fucking-lutely. Come on.
I mean, I can say from experience tutoring kids in standardized test preparation that most students 7th grade and older do not know either of those words. But does he get beat up a lot?
No, because he's a jock.
Oh, that's a lucky combo.
He's a very, yeah, he has all the gifts of but the
he's,
gods.
He's a soccer jock, right?
He's a soccer jock, yes. But he's also the kind of kid who, like, every time he tries a sport, the coach will come to us and be like, hey, he's really got the hang of this very quickly. And we're like, yeah, 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 we know.
He has good court vision.
Yeah, he's very coordinated. He's a coordinated kid. What do you want? I think that's he great. Really wants to start playing basketball, and I think that's when he's going to meet his match, which I think will be good for him. It'll be good
I mean,
for him.
Maybe physically, if is he tall for his age?
Yes, and we are short little immigrant people.
Yeah.
He's a Chinese Jew, but mixing the races somehow, I don't know, brings things out. You never know.
Best of both worlds plus tall for some reason.
Yeah. Yes.
Weird. No, maybe he'll be good at basketball. I could see if he's bright and if he's quick, and I mean quick mentally, but also quick physically, coordinated, he could be great at basketball because he could be a good, what's the equivalent of a playmaker in basketball? I
don't like point guard. Like, yeah. Like a point guard. We'll see. Meanwhile, our daughter is like in total imagination fantasy world. And I have to say, I think we should talk about the Octonauts because it's very good.
Is it? I've not actually, I don't think, ever watched.
I think we should drink and watch it.
We should. That is such a good idea. I've played with some Octonauts toys with my niece and nephew at various Christmases and stuff. But there's a few actually preschool shows that I think would be really fun to get drunk and watch and talk about.
That's a really good. I still hope that someday we will do our MST3K episode where we actually just watch something and like.
Just watch Blue's Clues and rip it apart.
Yes. Anyway, all right. We just want to thank, by the way, patrons, our beloved listeners who are with us on Discord chatting about how we are all unwinding from the election, because we all are.
Yeah, totally.
We just want to thank you, as we do every week. We love you guys.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you on the Discord server. We have our own little Discord chat room. It's called The Sauce Speakeasy, and it's for all our patrons, and you all were great talking about the election, the post-election stress, the holidays and everything, dealing with family.
And how you're all managing with COVID all over the country, man, all over the world. It's really like everybody's dealing with a different way of being with it, and it's something else.
If anyone is interested in joining the conversation who's not there already, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/saucepodcast. If you become a member, then you get access to the Sauce Speakeasy and can join the chat.
All right, guys, let's get to it.
Our first topic, I want you to introduce this one, Maya, because you brought it to my attention, but it was brought to your attention by a Twitter thread that you saw.
Okay. So I saw this Twitter thread. We are sharing it with you on Twitter. There's a professor of geography and environment at the University of Hawaii, really, obviously very brilliant, interesting guy named Reese Jones. He's the chair of the department. He's the editor-in-chief of an academic journal called Geopolitics. He is about to put out a book about how the Border Patrol became the most violent police force in America, from its Wild West beginnings to its militarized capacity today. Like, he's clearly this, like, deeply, deeply interesting person for all kinds of reasons that have nothing to do with this Twitter thread. So I just want to set it up with that. However, he had this thread where he says, why is the media obsessed with this particular photo angle of Donald Trump? A thread. And he proceeds to show over and over and over again, like a dozen of these, like all over the world, publications all over, who keep getting the same shot, keep getting and using the same shot of Trump. And I was like, oh my God, we have to talk about this. Okay.
So let's describe this because, yes, of course, this is radio, sort of.
Right, right.
This picture that he's describing is a photograph of Trump that's a profile. It's taken from the side.
Yes.
As he's about to enter or as he's leaving the White House briefing room.
Yes. And it's not just a profile of his head. It's what we might call a medium shot, or in film is sometimes called the plein américain, because it's the shot that's kind of has enough of a body that if it was a Western, you'd see the holster of the gun. So that's the history of the name of that shot.
Is that why it's called that?
Yeah. It's the plein américain because it's just enough of the body to get the holster. So it's like from the top of Trump's head to kind of right below his trunk, mid-thigh,
yeah, yeah.
And it's in profile, and he's entering or exiting the room. And there's this other thing about it where, like, there's the curtain.
Yeah. Because he's in the midst of entering or exiting the briefing room, in all of these photos, he is framed between a blue curtain that he's either walking toward or walking away from, and the door to the briefing room. He's in between them, and it creates a sort of narrow space that he exists inside.
With the white wall.
Yeah, the white wall behind him. And then to one side is the blue curtain, and to the other side is the door.
And it's glass. So you get his reflection, which I think is very important. So you have this, like, Trump going towards his reflection, or he's reflecting away. It's kind of doubled. And the curtain is very pleated. It has those very proper kind of, like, pleats, which give it a kind of texture. So there's this, like, vanishing point between the glass and the blue pleats, and the blue pleat being kind of reflected in the glass.
Yeah.
And at the end of this vanishing point is Trump in profile to mid-trunk coming in and going out.
So it's interesting just that this framing of Trump, this particular angle in this spot, is so popular. In many, many articles from publications around the world, as Maya said, this is just sort of used as the photo of Trump. Whatever the headline may be, as Trump fights to reverse election, business and world leaders move on. Fighting election results, Trump employs a new weapon. Facebook removes Trump campaign's misleading coronavirus video. These are just headlines that happen to go with stories where this photo is used.
And he's tracking the use of it all year. It's like from March and then last week.
Yeah, those are recent ones. He says the first one he could find was March 22nd.
Right.
And there's one from April 20th.
March 29th, but then we have July. It's all through the summer.
Yeah.
September, October. Yeah.
Okay. So number one, I think, just sort of pragmatically speaking, you can see how Trump, since the start of COVID, was doing a lot of press briefings.
Right.
Right? He was in the White House press briefing room frequently because they were doing the coronavirus. They were doing daily briefings for a while, right?
Right.
So, okay, logically, there's going to be a certain number of photos from that venue that's going to happen.
Okay.
Though that would explain more like March, April, May than the more recent ones. And they certainly continue and, in fact, seem almost more frequent in more recent months. So let's talk about what we see here and what we think is appealing about this photo to publishers or editors,
yeah,
or whoever's making this decision.
Okay, first of all, I have to say that as we're getting closer to the end, mm-hmm, and we see the increasing, like, disaster, I think we're getting less access to Trump. And I think it could be that, like, one of the only times we're getting to, it's not like he has, like, remember how Obama just had this, like, a whole movie where the guy who was documenting every minute of his presidency just came out with a documentary about how,
right,
like, Trump doesn't give anyone that access. So I almost feel like it's the only time people get him. And it's the only time people get him when he's not aware of being on camera.
And that goes to the whole profile thing, right? He's not posing. He's not looking at the camera. He's completely focused on something else, where he's going. And so it is sort of a candid moment in that way.
It's as close as we're going to get. And it's a liminal space. It's a liminal space. I think the liminality of this space is very important.
Explain what that means in case people aren't familiar with the term.
So liminal means that it's in the in-between. Between one stage of being and the next is a liminal state. Like you could see, this is because I have a 10-year-old, like you could see adolescence as a liminal state. You could see often when you look at rituals, they think about like liminal states. When somebody's dying, it's a liminal state between life and death. Like it is a space that is in between one state of being and another.
It's like a border zone, so to speak.
Yes.
It's on the line, liminal. So yes, that's a really interesting observation. It's a liminal space. It's in between the briefing room and wherever he's been or is going. I think that the outstanding feature of these photos to me is the isolation, the sense of isolation. It's Trump alone, but because of the way it's framed, he is in the center of this picture, and everything to the left and right of him is either wall or curtain. And where it's door, it's a reflection, which I want to get into in a second. But the framing, that's sort of like the vanishing point perspective thing, it gives this impression like he's down a long hall and like in a little box.
He's between a rock and a hard place. He's alone.
He's trapped. Yeah.
He's trapped.
He's alone in this liminal space. He's trapped. He's on his own. And there's different ways you could read that depending on what the story is. It could be the lone executive who has to deal with the grave responsibilities of his office. And no matter how many advisors he has, in the end, it's on him alone.
It's on him alone. But it's also like, nothing can save you, fucker.
Yeah, you're all alone.
There's no space for anyone else here. There's no Ivanka to like try to make you feel better in here. There's no space for anyone else. Like, you're going to do this.
But that also sort of is an externalization of Trump's mind. What's in his mind besides himself? Like, he is all that matters to him. And the picture sort of shows that.
And is that the reflection? Is that the reflection?
Yeah. But it's his total aloneness. It's his spiritual and emotional aloneness. He can never connect to another human being in a meaningful way.
The purity of his narcissism, really.
Yes,
it's a very
pure
narcissism. Wow.
With the reflection, it's really interesting because the reflection is the door to the briefing room. So depending on whether he's going into it or coming out, he may be facing his own reflection or he may be facing away from it. And depending on where he's standing and where the photographer is standing, how close he is to the reflection and how much of the reflection you see can vary, I think in really poetic ways. Like there's this one from the New York Times opinion section, Trump has a gut feeling about what COVID-19 means for 2020. So that's from April 15th, in case it wasn't obvious. It's from early on. In this picture, he's walking toward the briefing room. So Trump is actually cut off by, so you see the front of his face and torso, but the back of his head and body are cut off by the curtain. And ahead of him is his own reflection, sort of looking seriously back at him.
Yes. Yes.
And it makes me think of The Neverending Story. Do you remember? I think it's the second gate he has to go through in The Neverending Story. Where he has to face his own reflection.
Face himself.
Himself.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And like the bravest warrior fails here because he can't face himself.
Here's another thing that I want to get to, which I think is part of this. I've seen at one point, because there's been a lot of discussion over the years about Trump's dementia, potential dementia, unacknowledged potential. And there's something, and you know how he's very afraid of like walking on ramps or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like there are pictures of, there's a certain stance that happens that I've seen doctors post of like the sort of stance of people with dementia that's
that sort of hunched, like leaning forward.
Like you're tipped forward.
As he does. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like there's something about the way that the profile gets the the creation of his hair, the sort of invention of his hair.
Yes, and it's like the iconography.
Yes.
That he even uses like as a logo.
Yes. So it's like the iconography of this created, invented hair, but also this tipped, the tip of his body. The leaning forward, the tip of his body. Which is interesting because he actually shows how, like, they have a picture, they have a couple of Fauci in the same pose, mm-hmm. and they even have one of Pence in the same pose. But Fauci is upright.
Yes, his posture is very good.
His posture is upright, and Trump has that bizarre, it's very, like, smooth criminal Michael Jackson, like, like, tilt. And so I feel like the way that it makes him a caricature and the way that it exaggerates these parts of him that are very vulnerable, like, he doesn't look good in these photos. You know what I mean? It's not...
He doesn't look good in many photos. Any photos, I don't want to say any, but, like, I'd be hard-pressed to think of one where he looked good.
Yeah, but I've,
I get what you're saying.
But the photos that he's going to use of himself are generally like, he's like, ah, he's smiling or he's gesturing or he's like, ah, like front face, like, like,
he definitely does not like photos of his profile because of the chin. He doesn't like the saggy chin that is visible in the profile picture. So that is the sort of unflattering bit of it for sure. But I think... overall, it's depicting him as sort of contemplative. He's either contemplating his loneliness and aloneness in the world or his incredible responsibility as president. But either way, it's sort of showing him in a way that you can't help but interpret as that he must be thinking about something.
I disagree. I actually feel like what it shows him as, because it's in this liminal state and because he's not prepared for the camera yet, I feel like it's an incredibly vulnerable image. And I think that vulnerability could be seen as something that is like, okay, I'm vulnerable because I'm carrying the weight of the world on my shoulder. Or maybe I'm just vulnerable because I am way out of my depth and I have dementia. And I feel like there is a way that these photos do not make him seem heroic or trustworthy.
That's fair. I do want to ask one last thing.
Okay.
What's the difference between him facing his reflection in the mirror versus walking away from it? What do we see when he's walking away from the reflection?
I feel like... there's a relief to it. I feel like when he leaves, it's like, oh, thank God, like I got through this shit. Because when he's going in, it's always like, oh.
To me, I see him facing his reflection, and it's very much like you have to face your demons. You have to face who you are. When he's walking away from the reflection, it evokes the duality. He's facing two different directions at once. You know?
Janus. He's Janus-faced.
Yes, kind of. Like, and you could look at that in different ways, but it, to me, evokes, like, well, there's his public persona that he's trying to show you, and there's this vulnerable, shoulder-slumped kind of guy who's just relieved to be getting out of that situation.
Getting out of that and, like, just trying to get back to his room where he can just watch Fox News all day.
And the reflection kind of evokes that idea of the artifice of his persona, his duplicity, his being a liar. It all kind of
and this kind of haunted, like there's something very haunted and creepy about it. Actually, when I first saw this thread, I was reminded of... I mean, we've talked about this before, that in the month before the election in 2016, so many New York Times articles about Hillary would use the metaphor of like storm clouds or whatever. Like there was this weird language that they kept, oh, the clouds that are, you know. And I feel like there's a way in which it's a little uncanny. It's a little bizarre. It's liminal. It's not, you don't kind of know where he is. He's in one place or another. It's very purposefully
going two directions at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reese Jones, Dr. Reese Jones, I'm sure your PhD. Thank you so much for this thread.
At Reese Jones UH.
Yes, that is correct.
If you want to check out the thread, but we will post some of those pictures as well, and we'll retweet some of the tweets. But yeah, if you want to see his Twitter, that's where you can find it. Thank you so much, Reese Jones, for bringing this to our attention, because we had a lot to say.
Oh, it's just for us. All right, guys, let's be real and let's talk about The Mandalorian. I cannot believe that the world has been such a shit show that of all of the things that we have not gotten to until December 2020,
I know.
The Mandalorian is one of them.
The show's been on for like over a year and we haven't even talked about it yet.
Now, here's the thing. I haven't watched it. It's become this thing. I've watched a little bit of it. My husband's watching it while I exercise in the evenings. It's not my thing. But I mean, what we're really talking about tonight is Baby Yoda. And I have plenty to say about Baby Yoda. But first, okay. I think if you could briefly, like, should I watch The Mandalorian? Like, you're the real geek between the two of us. Let's be real.
I mean, we have our realms of geekdom, but okay. So I love The Mandalorian.
Oh!
I think it's fucking great. In fact, I think it is the best thing that has happened to Star Wars since Disney bought the property.
Whoa!
And it has, in fact, redeemed Star Wars for me. Like,
oh my God!
Before The Mandalorian, I would have said I'm not a Star Wars fan because I hated the sequel movies so much.
Wow.
Flames.
Some flames.
In the side of my face. Yeah. Anyway, the show is excellent. It is clearly made by people who love Star Wars and know Star Wars. So they're creating this world and these characters who are true to Star Wars while also giving you something new all the time and following up. It's supposed to take place after Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
So you get this sense of the world. Mostly they're in the Outer Rim, but you get the sense of like what the Outer Rim worlds are like in the years after the Empire falls. It also has tied into the prequels, the original trilogy, even the sequel movies. And it has tied into the Clone Wars animated show and the Rebels animated show, which were very good, which I highly recommend watching. Between the Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Mandalorian, they have absolutely redeemed
themselves. They've redeemed themselves to you.
In fact, they come close to, I don't want to say they've redeemed the prequel trilogy, but they come close to doing so.
Wow.
Because they give texture and depth and meaning to the prequel trilogy.
Whoa.
And the whole thing is excellent. Also, Rogue One. I liked Rogue One.
Okay. So I have a very just brief little question here before we get into the real star of this conversation, which is Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda.
Do you think that the reason that the prequels then and the whatever, the sequels, the prequels and the sequels didn't work is because they needed a series to flesh out the world, that a movie is just too small of a space to like get into it properly?
Yes and no. Mostly no, but it's a good question. Here's how I would put it. George Lucas did not have the chops as a screenwriter to really flesh out the story he was trying to tell.
Okay.
So in the Clone Wars cartoon, through this multiple season series, they did so. Do you need to have multiple seasons of a series to do it? I don't think so. I think it could have been done well in a film. Think about the sort of brief, broad strokes you see in the original Star Wars trilogy and how much they communicate to you so efficiently about this world.
Right.
You don't need a series to understand, even though this is like a completely new world. It's also familiar in a lot of ways. The Clone Wars, for example, develops the relationship between Anakin Skywalker and his Padawan, Ahsoka Tano. What's amazing about it is you have Ahsoka is this like 14, 15-year-old Padawan, and she's just so good-hearted and cool. and you're watching her and her relationship with Anakin develop, and you're like, what's gonna happen when he becomes Darth Vader and all the Jedi get killed? Is Ahsoka gonna get killed? And then when it happens in the Clone Wars, Anakin turns evil and all the clone troopers that they've developed relationships with too have to turn around and kill them. It's so dramatic. It's so meaningful. You really care in a way that Lucas, I think, struggled to make you care.
Well, I mean, I hear that Lucas is a sociopath and doesn't have human feelings and has a hard time with those kind of things. But I feel like what you seem to be saying is that those things build emotional stakes.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
That are not built by themselves in the movie. Like, the movie does not build stakes. And I felt like that with the sequels very much so, that like any of the stakes are brought with you. You bring the stakes 100%. To it. And the movie does not actually do that for you. And it actually makes me think a lot about like the Harry Potter adaptation of the movies, like where it's like, we know you've read the books and you're already invested, so we're just going to do shortcuts just so you can see the things that you want to see. But it's not, as a movie, something that can stand on its own.
I totally agree, although I think there's a lot of people who really enjoy the Harry Potter movies separate from the books. I don't know. That's another conversation. That's a problem.
But what I really want to get to.
Okay, let's get to Baby Yoda.
Okay, so there is a Baby Yoda in this show.
Yes, as I think everybody knows at this point.
Yes, I know. But I'm saying, like, this is the part that, okay, so the Mandalorian, bounty hunter, he's sort of there to fulfill all the needs of us not getting to know, Boba Fett. Like, we never got to really know Boba Fett. And so this is like, hey guys, let's know Boba Fett.
Listen, yes. The Mandalorian, obviously, there's an element of everyone thinking Boba Fett was rad and cool, but he had like one line.
And then he gets exploded and died. Like, here's a
he went in the Sarlacc and died.
Right. Yeah. But I always remember him going
It's a goofy, it's actually like an embarrassingly goofy death
It is a very goofy death, but that's why it's so memorable. Mm. But we're like, okay, for our Boba Fett fans who created an entire internal emotional world to support this character, that's what he is. And in it, very early in the show, he adopts this child that is essentially was initially, he gets a name later, but everybody's like, oh, it's Baby Yoda.
Right. And the child is not Yoda. This is long after Yoda has passed and become a Force ghost. This is a child of the same species as Yoda. He's an infant. Right. He's 50 years old, but that's still an infant or toddler in that species development life cycle. And yeah, the Mandalorian is supposed to capture the baby. That was his bounty hunter job, but then he feels attached to the baby, rescues it, and then the whole show becomes about him trying to help the child. The unnamed child that we all are just going to call Baby Yoda, until recently, spoiler alert, we found out his real name was Grogu.
Okay.
Which is fine. Whatever. Grogu.
That's fine. Okay. Like, whatever. Okay. For our purposes, he's just Baby Yoda.
Yes.
I think we need to start with what is uncanny and wrong about Baby Yoda, because it is such obvious pandering to Star Wars fans. It's so like a bunch of guys in a brainstorming session where this is like Jon Favreau. So I would say that they were all on cocaine, but probably not anymore. They just drink a lot of coffee and go home to their wives and children. But like, it was real kicked around the office kind of idea. What if we had a baby Yoda? And it's such pandering. It's like, we want yoga, but then it's a baby.
Are you sure that it wasn't a directive that came from like Disney corporate? It was like, you're going to put a baby Yoda in this show.
But then Disney corporate was the one who were brainstorming, like, how can, because it's also, here's the thing about babies. And I have a friend whose mom was a professor, and she used to do this lecture. She's like a psychology professor, where she would put a picture of an infant next to a picture of a puppy, next to a picture of a kitten. Mm. There are things that all babies have in common that make you want to take care of them. They have the sort of big eyes and the sort of little face, and they're just so cute. And like, that they would take Yoda with all of his sort of wonderful grotesqueness and cuten him in this way is just so pandering beyond all I can.
I have so much to say in response to that. Number one, Yoda was already cute. Okay. Yoda was cute. Everybody thinks Yoda's cute. Number two, I hear what you're saying about it seems like the worst pandering, but what I recall is that when The Mandalorian premiered in, I want to say, late November of last year, there were no Baby Yoda toys. I remember people commenting on this, that like, it was a month before Christmas and Baby Yoda toys did not exist. Like, what's the meme? Like, you had one job.
Right.
Disney marketers, you had one job.
Right.
It was to get Baby Yoda toys on the fucking shelves for Christmas.
So if this was a pander, there would have been Baby Yoda toys.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
They were slow to, like, pick up on the fact that Baby Yoda was a phenomenon. I will agree that there is something, if not uncanny, then wrong. Something strange about the Baby Yoda. The idea of Yoda, the wise, elderly master, being reimagined as an infant. I know it's not actually Yoda, but like, yes. And more so than that, there's something about the baby force user. The child in the cradle that also is more powerful than anyone around and could like crush your skull in a thought if he really wanted to.
Which he doesn't because he's so innocent.
Oh, no. He doesn't. He steals your cookies.
Right.
Which he did do in an episode, spoiler alert. But you know, and he does save people and heal people and do kind things and there's a like a humorous moment where this is one character, Kara, is arm wrestling with the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda starts force choking her because he doesn't understand that it's a game. That's so cute. He's so cute.
Okay, this is the part where I'm like, this is what's wrong with it. Because also, we were talking about stakes, right? Like how important stakes are for a story. They will never kill Baby Yoda. The fact that Baby Yoda's there always keeps us safe. It always keeps us safe in this world. They will never kill Baby Yoda.
Okay, that's probably true. But I think you could say the same for almost any TV show, any film, any adventure. You know the hero's not going to die. You know the hero's not going to lose the MacGuffin and lose the whole fucking thing. Like, it's not going to happen. We know that, but it's still fun to watch, number one, because Baby Yoda's super cute, but also because the relationship between the Mandalorian, or as people call him, Mando, and the baby, the relationship is developing and growing and becoming more rich and interesting, and that creates stakes because you care about them staying together and you don't know if they're going to be able to remain together.
Okay, so then this brings us to the point of all this. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded, if you go on Instagram right now, there is an account. There's a woman who had a baby. She also owns 3 golden doodles. And all she posts are pictures of her little baby napping with these puppies. That since this baby was born, the baby naps with the puppies. He'll hold on to the
what's
fur.
What's the account? Because I would like to see this.
Okay. Sam the dude. Oh, no, that's not it. Sorry. Is it Samson? The dude, yeah, it's Samson the dude, the D-O-O-D.
Okay, S-A-M-S-O-N,
the
dude.
D-O-O-D.
Samson the dude. Oh my God.
It's just pictures.
Is that a dog? It looks like a teddy bear.
I know. And so this baby is basically growing up in a life where his whole coming into consciousness is napping in a pile of golden doodles. That's this child's consciousness.
These are the cutest dogs I've ever seen. I thought I knew what kind of dog I wanted, but now it might, oh my God. These dogs, Maya, they look listeners, I can't tell you. They look like teddy bears.
And then look at the rosy baby.
The rosy baby. Babies are darling. But come on, these are living teddy bears.
These are living teddy bears. But the point is, they are living teddy bears. And the baby, this rosy-cheeked blonde infant, is napping wrapped up in them, right? Like, it's
yes.
ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculously so awesome. Why are you bringing this up?
I am bringing this up because I'm saying, what is the need right now for the cuteness of baby mm-hmm. Yoda? There's clearly an emotional need that this is satisfying. You see this little baby Yoda, the big eyes, the little furry ears in mm-hmm, the floating mm-hmm. kind of bassinet, yeah, the sort bassinet. Of little...
And he makes these little noises. He yeah. makes these little cooing noises.
Yes, correct.
So cute.
And if 50 years only got him to this stage, we know that he's stuck being a baby for a lot longer. He's gonna be cute forever. Okay. Why do we need this right now? Like,
I mean, isn't it clear? I think we could agree. Okay, Baby Yoda, yeah, is the ideal figure to get us through 2020. Could we have gotten through 2020 without Baby Yoda? I'm going to say no. There's just no way it could have happened. Because, yeah, it's a balm. The cuteness is just a balm. It's just like something pure and sweet and adorable.
And it's about nostalgia. It's about nostalgia. Yes. Let's take this thing that we love that is so embedded in us because of nostalgia, and then just make it even more what it is by babyfying it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to take this thing that I already am so invested in as this object, this fetish object of nostalgia, mm-hmm. and then let's make it a baby. Like, that just like takes it even further into that.
Yeah, I see that. And obviously, nostalgia is an important element here. And it's deliberate that they made him, Grogu, the same species as Yoda. That immediately brings associations. Okay, Force user, Yoda, it's all there.
Right.
As opposed to making him be like some completely new species or making him just be a different species, like, you know, one of the creatures in the Mos Eisley Cantina, you know, walrus face. A walrus right. Baby walrus face. No one wants right. that, really.
Right.
Although it'd probably be cute. Anyway, yes, there's an element of nostalgia. I think there's also a weird thing about baby who's so cute and adorable and you just want to hug him, but also he's a Force user. Who's like really crazy powerful and can save you. He can save you. Like, he's not always gonna do it. But when push comes to shove, if something bad is happening, if shit's hitting the fan, cute baby's gonna fix it.
The youth are gonna save us from climate change. It's a climate exactly. change. Yeah, the youth will save us from climate change.
It's all about climate change.
Everything is.
And just this belief that like this younger generation, they have this special power that we can't comprehend and we don't know what it is, but like it's gonna heal you. Also, the whole narrative arc of the show is Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, saving this child. He right. has to protect him from other bounty hunters, and then his mission in the second season is to try to bring him to the Jedi so he can be properly trained and mm-hmm. be with his people. And all along the way, as I talked about, the relationship between the two characters develops. And so fundamentally, the show is about fatherhood. It's about this character who is uber masculine in the sense of being a great warrior, a bounty hunter, a Mandalorian. He's got the armor and no one can touch him, basically, because he's got this fucking armor and all these toys. But his growth as a person is going to happen through his relationship with this child. And there's something in there about masculinity. And our changing conception of masculinity.
Right.
That we have to incorporate this nurturing element into our concept of what it means to be masculine.
That actually is going to be what redeems us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that I feel like is a Han thing. Like, love and loyalty and being part of something bigger than himself is what redeems him.
Yes.
And so that's what this is going to be. It's very much about redemption.
Yes, but very specifically redemption through fatherhood, where for Han, it's like friendship, love, loyalty, and believing in a cause.
Political.
But for Mando, it's very specifically nurturing, caring for, protecting a vulnerable, innocent child, although he's not that vulnerable. But whatever, he's still a baby.
He's just so cute. Well, no, but I think that, he's so cute. But I feel like that's very interesting. I mean, fatherhood is something that clearly we have to get into at some point. But I feel like there is something about that that's very interesting about this moment that we're trying to reinscribe upon masculinity, that the whole reason for the development of a lot of these ideas of masculinity was to be a patriarch and for the survival of your family. And in modern times, survival and family gets taken away, and there's this sort of toxic masculinity that's untethered from any responsibility. So we're trying to reconnect masculinity with responsibility. That's about responsibility and fatherhood and the survival of the next generation.
That's fair. But I also think it's taking it a next step, a more contemporary step, where qualities like nurturing and kindness and tenderness are being incorporated into that concept of masculinity.
Yeah, absolutely. Caregiving.
Caregiving. Exactly. Yeah. Well, we figured it out.
All right. We're done. We're done here. You're welcome. Drunk are you? When's the last time we drunk-o-metered?
Oh my god, we haven't done drunk-o-meter in ages. I don't think we've done it this year. How drunk are you?
I'm nervous about when I stand up. We watched the first hour of the Maradona documentary on HBO. Mm-hmm. So we're going to finish that tonight. And I have a feeling like I'm going to stand up and I'm going to be like, I don't know if I can finish it tonight.
So what out of 10?
I think a six. I think I'm a fair 5-6.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to stand up. Sounds like a 7 or 8 to me.
No, but I don't know. I'm slurring. Definitely it's affecting the clarity of my speech right now.
I only had one drink. I'm like a 3, but I'll go have another after this because I don't want to be at a 3. I want to move up that scale.
After this day.
Today was a day. This whole month has been a month. This year has been a year. So,
guys, we know it's been a day. And a week, and a month, and a year. And we are here for you. And now that we are moving into this realm outside of Trump, we are still getting ready, gearing up for our problematic faves. Send them to us. We have a whole list going. We're ready to go.
And we still have to do daddy-daughter dances and that whole phenomenon.
Oh my god. Yeah, like girl dads. We never did girl dads. Also, Cobra Kai.
You finally watched it?
Oh, we have many things to discuss about Cobra Kai.
Oh my god, that show.
So, we have many things that bring you pleasure that we're going to ruin by deconstructing for you. And we love our listeners. Please rate us on whatever podcast app you're using. Tweet at us. Insta at us. We are at Sauce Podcast. Anywhere you're looking, we're at patreon.com/saucepodcast, saucepodcast@gmail.com. Just come.
Reach out. Contact us. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us what you'd like us to ruin. Thank you to our patrons on Patreon. Keep the conversation going on the Discord. We are loving it.
When we can like travel again, we are going to like do things.
We're going to do video episodes same place. Oh. It's going to be so cool. But, you know, we have to wait for the vaccine and the money and a few things to come into place.
Yeah,
but it's coming.
It's coming.
It's going to happen. Coming. 2021, that's our year. Anyway, if you want to reach me individually for whatever reason, I am at GynoStar on all the various platforms.
You can find me at Maya Garantz anywhere you are looking for Maya Garantz's.
And until next time, adios, amoebas.